Welcome to the KMED News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have this week's sports report, but first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off in Mendocino County. The National Weather Service forecasts that moderate to major heat risk will continue throughout the weekend, with elevated heat risk extending into early next week for interior valleys. Temperatures are expected to range between 100 degrees Fahrenheit and 108 degrees before slowly moderating by Tuesday. Because prolonged exposure to extreme heat can pose serious health risks, and drifting smoke from regional and out-of-state wildfires is expected to cause air quality to fluctuate between moderate and unhealthy for sensitive groups. Mendocino County Public Health is urging residents to take following precautions to protect themselves and their families. To stay safe during extreme heat, stay hydrated, seek cooler environments, keep your home cool, and reduce indoor heat sources. Avoid using ovens, stoves, clothes, dryers, and other heat-producing appliances during peak afternoon hours whenever possible. Dress for the heat. Protect those most at risk. Check on older adults, young children, and individuals with chronic medical conditions, as they are more vulnerable to heat-related illnesses. Limit smoke exposure. Individuals with chronic respiratory, heart, or kidney disease should reduce outdoor activity when smoke and haze is present and remain indoors with clean, filtered air whenever possible. From the Department of Cannabis Control. Several licensees have reported receiving emails that appear to come from the Department of Cannabis Control and request that they review or verify important information by clicking a Review Document button. The fraudulent message may present itself as an annual document review or verification request. It may include license details, personal information, or references to DocuSign. However, these emails were not sent by the DCC. When the DCC requests information, the request will always come from an employee using an email address ending in @cannabis.ca.gov. If you receive an email requesting license information or payment of a fee that seems suspicious, please take the following precautions. Do not click any links or buttons within the email, as they may lead to a malicious website designed to collect credentials or personal information. Do not provide any personal, business, or license-related information through the link or the response to the sender. Do not reply to the sender. You can also contact the DCC directly to verify the authenticity of the request by emailing info@cannabis.ca.gov or calling them at 844-612-2322. In Ukiah, a small single-engine plane crashed on North Main Street between Perkins and Norton Street shortly after 10:30 a.m. The plane impacted some power lines and caused a small, short-lived fire. Thankfully, the pilot was okay and no injuries were reported. North Main Street was closed during the emergency response. The plane had originally taken off from Red Bluff, and the cause of the crash is under investigation. From Caltrout in Humboldt Bay. Construction is officially underway on the Elk River Estuary Restoration Project, marking a major milestone in a decades-long effort to restore one of Humboldt Bay's most important watersheds. Led by California Trout, in partnership with tribal nations, local landowners, public agencies, scientists, and community partners, the project will restore critical estuary habitat, improve conditions for native fish, and help the Elk River adapt to rising sea levels and a changing climate. The first phase of construction will restore approximately 40 acres at Swain Slough, part of a larger 857-acre restoration effort designed to bring back natural tidal processes, expand habitat, and reconnect the river to the landscape that surrounds it. The Elk River watershed has long supported salmon, steelhead, wildlife, working lands, and communities. The river flows through the ancestral territory of the Wiat people, whose people have stewarded these lands and waters since time immemorial. Over generations, diking, draining, timber harvests, and other land use changes altered the watershed, reducing estuary function and creating challenges for both native fish and surrounding communities. Estuaries are among California's most productive ecosystems, These transition zones between rivers and the ocean provide young salmon and steelhead with food, shelter, and the opportunity to grow stronger before entering the Pacific. Restoring the Elk River estuary will help rebuild this critical habitat, while improving the watershed's ability to withstand flooding and sea level rise. For local landowners, the project represents a new model for working together to restore a changing landscape while supporting the people who have long depended on it. Caltrout's approach has centered on collaboration with willing landowners to create restoration opportunities while respecting the agricultural history and communities of the Elk River Valley. Through voluntary transactions, Caltrout has helped secure at-risk lands that can be restored to tidal marsh while reducing future risks from flooding and sea level rise. The Elk River Estuary Restoration Project is supported by a coalition of partners, including NOAA, the Wiat Tribe, State Coastal Conservancy, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, regional agencies, local landowners, scientific partners, and community stakeholders. Construction will continue as additional phases of restoration move forward. And up next are stories for this broadcast, including this week's sports report. This is KMUD News. Here's Ray Hamill with this week's KMUD News Sports Report.
Another entertaining and competitive Humboldt crab season came to an end this week. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the crabs in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including a look back at the local summer baseball season, how one North Coast travel softball team fared at a big tournament in Oregon, where a record-breaking HDNL athlete is taking his talents after graduating high school, a look ahead to the new high school football season, and how the Redwood Acres Raceway will celebrate motorsports fans. But first up, another summer season at the Arcata Ballpark came to an end all too soon this past week, as the Humboldt Crabs wrapped up with another series sweep. The Crabs welcomed the Placer County Peloteros to Arcata for a season-concluding three-game series, and the home team took all three games. And there was no shortage of runs over the three games. The Crabs won the series opener 19-4 on Friday night, and followed that with a 16-4 win on Saturday night, before closing out the summer with a come-from-behind 7-5 win on Sunday afternoon. The Crabs trailed 5-3 going into the bottom of the sixth inning on Sunday, but scored four late unanswered runs to take the win, including three in the bottom of the eighth. Kawana Suarez and Alex Harrington each hit a home run in the win, while Fortuna's Cody Collins added a double. Shyran Humphreys also had a huge weekend for the Crabs, hitting three home runs in Friday's win. The Crabs closed out the season with a record of 40-13. First-year manager Jeff Giacomini enjoyed a good debut season in charge of the team after the former Crabs player and longtime assistant coach took over from Robin Guyver. Among the highlights of the season, the summer got off to a thrilling start with a walk-off win over the Humboldt Eagles in the opening week. Two other big highlights included a no-hitter by McKinleyville's Jackson Kelly against the West Coast Kings, as well as a walk-off grand slam by Colton Boardman in extra innings against the Stockton Pearls on Father's Day. It was also a good summer for several other local baseball teams, including the Humboldt County Little League All-Stars and the county's American Legion clubs. The young Eel River 10-year-old All-Stars enjoyed a stellar couple of months, following their District 26 championship with a section tournament championship and advancing all the way to the NorCal State Tournament. Redwood Empire Little League, meanwhile, were the most successful of the local organizations. The Redwood Empire 11s and 12s won county championships and advanced to their respective section tournaments, while the McKinleyville Junior All-Stars also won both their district and section tournaments to round out another impressive summer for the county All-Star teams. In American Legion baseball action, the Northern Humboldt Giants and Humboldt Eagles enjoyed successful summers. The Giants were competitive throughout, while the Eagles 17U's won a championship at their own tournament and represented the area well at the recent district tournament in Fairfield. After dropping their opening game at the district tournament, the Eagles won back-to-back-to-back games to finish pool play 3-1. However, they were eliminated on a tiebreaker to end their season. The Eagles 19U's also impressed this summer, with the highlight of the campaign coming at Fairfield when they placed first at the competitive Firecracker tournament. In local summer softball action, meanwhile, it was a productive week for the newly formed Humboldt Smoke Fast Pitch 18U team. Many of the Smoke players played together as part of the Mad River Mist Travel Team program 4 years ago before they began high school, and they reunited this summer while traveling to compete at last weekend's Northwest Fast Pitch Alliance Tournament in Medford, Oregon. The results didn't go their way, and they finished 0-4 in pool play while struggling to build any rhythm at the plate. But the local travel team, which is made up of some of the best high school and college players from throughout the county, would grow into the tournament and fared better in the tournament playoffs on Saturday. The Smoke opened the double elimination round with a narrow 2-0 loss to the Titans, a team made up of mostly college players. They would respond well, however, knocking off the tournament's top seeds, the Screaming Eagles, later in the day by a score of 6-3, as the Smoke Bats finally got going. They played a third game later in the day and fell 6-3 to the Lido's Lab to end their tournament. The Humboldt Smoke Fast Pitch will be back in action when they host a tournament at the Bear River Casino Resort Field on the weekend of August 15th-16th. Switching gears, a record-setting local high school track and field athlete announced recently that he will compete at the Division 1 level in college. Arcata High School's Skylar Collenberg has signed a letter of commitment to join the Sacramento State track team beginning this fall. Collenberg leaves a lasting legacy of success at Arcata High. He was a two-time state qualifier in the shot put and also qualified for the prestigious state meet in the discus this past spring. Collenberg, who placed first at the North Coast Section Meet of Champions in both events, set a school record in the discus with a throw of 176 feet 4 inches, having earlier set a league record in the shot put with a throw of 61 feet 11 inches in Brookings. The local high school football season, meanwhile, is fast approaching, with opening weekend now just 3 weeks away. The 9 HDNL programs will all begin official preseason practice on Monday, and local fans will get their first opportunity to see the teams in action at a scheduled preseason scrimmage on Saturday, August 22nd. The scrimmage is tentatively planned for the newly upgraded Albee Stadium at Eureka High School and the all-weather field there. However, with the final touches still being made to the new field, it may not be ready in time for the scrimmage, in which case it would be moved to McKinleyville High School. The Loggers will play their home games on the new field this fall. We'll break down the upcoming football season and all of the league's teams on next week's KMUD News Sports Report. And rounding out another big week in local sports, the Redwood Acres Raceway recently announced the inclusion of a new event for next weekend's Fan Appreciation Night. In addition to the night's regular racing, this year the popular annual event will include boat racing and a new pull and park trailer race. Trailer races have become immensely popular at many racetracks across the country. The object of the race is for a driver to pull their car into the back of a flatbed trailer as it is pulled around the track at speed. The first driver who was able to successfully pull their car onto the trailer and park it will be declared the race winner. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
Senate Committee discusses surveillance pricing, using AI to charge different prices to different customers. KPFA reports.
The Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime and Counterterrorism held a hearing Tuesday to explore surveillance pricing, which is quickly becoming a bipartisan issue, how it affects Americans, and what Congress should do about it. Surveillance pricing is the practice in which companies use personal data to charge consumers different prices based on numerous algorithms, including a willingness to pay. A practice that is being questioned by Lee Heppner, senior legal counsel for the American Economic Liberties Project.
These technologies are designed to estimate the highest price any given consumer is willing to pay at any given time. They also serve to erode any notion of a fair and predictable price.
Former Federal Trade Commission Chair Lena Khan once described a fair marketplace in simple terms. The price they charge you is the same price they charge me. But now, even the idea of a reliable price tag may be disappearing. According to experts, in the age of surveillance pricing, the price tag may no longer tell you what something costs. It may tell a story of how much a company believes you can be made to pay. Different from dynamic pricing, where retailers adjust costs based on broader market factors, experts say AI has revolutionized a company's ability to predict customer behavior, tracking things like location and purchase history, but also more personal information, like the number of children you have, how much battery life is left on your phone while making timely purchases, how often products stay in a digital shopping cart, and even people's mouse cursor movements. AI companies then sell this data to retailers, who use it to adjust prices individually. Committee Chair and Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri says this is a scam that harms Americans and lines the pockets of large corporations.
This is one of the biggest scams in American history, this marriage between the AI industry and these mega corporations, and they're trying to pull it off against every American consumer. AI surveillance pricing is the unholy trinity of everything Americans hate, spying on people, ripping them off, and taking away jobs.
He notes that last year, the grocery store Kroger made over $500 million from selling its customers' data, totaling a third of their annual revenue. Numerous other industries have adopted this new surveillance practice, including concert tickets, airlines, hotels, and apparel. And this isn't just online. Brick-and-mortar stores can now implement electronic shelf labels, which allow for product prices to be updated remotely and instantaneously, like increasing prices during peak shopping hours. Hillary Caron, policy counsel for the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union, says this has disastrous consequences for families who depend on fair prices. But some, including University of Pennsylvania marketing professor Z. John Jang, maintains that surveillance pricing actually levels the playing field for consumers of all financial means and rewards those who are most savvy.
In my view, the term surveillance pricing is a misleading, unnecessarily prejudicial label for personalized pricing. Personalized pricing is not intrinsically sinister when viewed through the lens of economics. It is not only about your data and their profit, it also affects consumer access, market competition, and social welfare.
Lindsay Owens, president and CEO of Groundwork Collaborative, a think tank, disagrees.
The answer can't be to teach everyone how to beat the machine. We must set rules of the road so the machine plays fair. Clear and transparent prices are essential for a functioning capitalist economy.
To date, there have been 40 bills in 24 states introduced and passed to reduce surveillance pricing. Earlier this year, Representative Frank Pallone, the ranking Democrat on the House Energy and Commerce Committee, sent letters to 25 major retailers, including Amazon, Walmart, Target, Costco, CVS, Walgreens, Kroger, and Albertsons, asking whether they use customers' personal data or artificial intelligence to determine prices. The companies were asked to disclose what customer information they collect, whether it influences prices, and whether customers can opt out. However, the findings from his inquiry have not yet been made public. In the hearing, ranking Democrat Dick Durbin mentioned the Credit Card Competition Act, a bipartisan bill he sponsors with Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas. The bill proclaims to bring down the cost of swipe fees, small costs credit card companies take out of every purchase consumers make with a credit card. For some small businesses, he says, these swipe fees become their second or third largest expense. However, no floor votes have been scheduled for this bill as of yet.
Senate committee considering task force on Social Security solvency, while Democrats urge higher Social Security taxes on the rich, KPFA reports.
Idaho Republican Mike Crapo chairs the Senate Finance Committee. He suggested forming a task force to study Social Security solvency that could produce a report that Congress could use to craft legislation. He referred to a 1983 commission that worked on the issue as a guide.
That process demonstrated the value of creating a forum where policymakers could work through difficult issues and build consensus on a bipartisan basis. More than two decades later, I participated in another bipartisan effort to develop recommendations to address our nation's long-term fiscal challenges. Along with Senator Dick Durbin, the Democratic co-author of one of the process bills that will be discussed today.
Oregon Senator Ron Wyden is the ranking Democrat on the panel. He said the time for special commissions is long past. He said Americans want action now from Congress to fix Social Security's solvency issues.
Trump and the MAGA crowd give huge tax breaks to billionaires and massive corporations. That's what they did last year. And that bill plundered Social Security by $168 billion. You don't have to take my word for it. The number comes from the Social Security Actuary Office itself.
Senator Wyden said the Democratic plan is to increase payroll taxes on wealthy Americans, who, on average, pay a much lower rate on payroll taxes than middle-income Americans.
That can be done by updating Social Security to reflect the economy of today and ask billionaires to pay their fair share through the payroll and income taxes. That's it. So I wish that the Finance Committee was here to make sure that we have a substantive debate. Instead, the concept being discussed today would act as a shortcut for Republicans to carry out their long-sought goal of slashing Social Security benefit for retirees and raising taxes on middle-class folks.
Rebecca Vallis is with the National Academy of Social Insurance. It's a nonpartisan think tank studying social insurance programs. She said Social Security has bipartisan support from most Americans, and she said they want wealthy Americans to contribute their fair share to keep the program solvent.
Americans across party lines, income, education, and generations support starting by reforming the payroll tax cap for higher earners and are also interested in looking to other sources of wealth and income that have increasingly escaped Social Security's financing structure as the economy has shifted.
Republicans have proposed fixes like cutting Social Security benefits and raising the retirement age, both of which are deeply unpopular with many Americans. For KPFA News, I'm Max Pringle.
The FCC votes to let cell phones connect to satellites and to expand high-speed internet for rural clinics and hospitals, KPFA reports.
The Federal Communications Commission met Thursday to vote on proposals that could affect your phone, healthcare in rural America, among others. First on the agenda was satellites. Cell towers don't reach everywhere, so when you drive through the mountains or a rural stretch of highway, your phone can lose signal, except if you have a satellite phone. But the FCC just voted to change that. The plan is for your regular phone to connect straight to a satellite without a satellite phone. That's called direct-to-device technology, or D2D. FCC Chairman Brendan Carr says the goal is to keep your phone connected, even in places with no cell towers like mountains, rural roads, and disaster zones.
D2D services will allow consumers to connect directly from their smartphone or other device to a low-Earth orbit satellite. No need for a standalone satellite dish, and that will mean instant and ubiquitous connectivity.
But not everyone was fully on board. Commissioner Gomez voted yes, but warned that squeezing a new use into already crowded airwaves needs a careful look.
I'm glad to see that the FCC is continuously thinking about ways to support technological innovation and to improve spectrum utilization. At the same time, I am concerned about the effect this new use could have on existing permitted unlicensed uses in already congested bands. That is why, as we explore permitting innovative uses of spectrum like the one described in this NPRM, it is critical that we ask thorough questions and ground our proposals in technological studies that help us to strike the right balance between allowing new uses without undoing previous technological advances.
The measure passed, but the public will get weeks to weigh in before the FCC writes an actual rule. Finally, on rural healthcare, the FCC runs a program that helps pay for high-speed internet at hospitals and clinics in rural areas. Commissioner Trustee says she visited hospitals which provide life-saving care for remote patients via doctor visits or telehealth. Commissioners voted to speed up funding for the program across America, from Alaska to New Mexico.
In Alaska, I saw firsthand the importance of broadband-enabled medical care in some of our nation's most remote communities, including Eek and the Kenai Peninsula. In Kansas, I met with broadband providers working to ensure that disabled veterans can access the healthcare services they need.
That rule passed unanimously. The satellite plan and the rural hospital plan would both be open for public comment before they become final. Reporting for KPFA Radio, I'm Annetta Felix.
Here are the current Caltrans road advisories for those traveling around our region this weekend.
This is a Caltrans Sister Juan road information bulletin for Humboldt County state highways for the week beginning Friday, August 7th. On 36, expect delays in Hydesville on 11th and 12th. Expect up to 15-minute delays near Carlotta. Slide removal continues west to Grizzly Creek Renwood State Park. Check Caltrans Sister Juan social media for updates. Expect delays west of Maple Grove at the Little Larrabee Creek Bridge and at the Butte Creek Bridge. On 96, expect delays north of Willow Creek from Campbell Creek Road to Copper Bluff Mine in New Orleans. On 101, expect up to 10-minute delays north of the Mendocino County line. Expect delays north of Oreck and near the Del Norte County line. On 254, expect delays north of Wyatt. On 299, expect up to 10-minute delays east of Blue Lake. This is a Caltrans Sister Juan road information bulletin for Del Norte County state highways for the week beginning Friday, August 7th. On 101, expect delays from the Humboldt County line to the Klamath River Overflow Bridge. Expect up to 20-minute delays at various locations from Klamath to north of Last Chance Grade and near Hamilton Road on the 14th. On 199, expect up to 20-minute delays near Blue Slide and the Middle Fork Smith River Bridge. This is a Caltrans Sister Juan road information bulletin for Lake of Mendocino County state highways for the week beginning Friday, August 7th. In Lake County on 20, expect delays east of Route 53 near New Long Valley Road on the 13th and 14th. On 29, expect delays south of Middletown from Bradford Road to Shady Grove Road. And in Mendocino County on 1, expect delays at various locations from north of Schooner Gulch Road to north of Elk. Expect up to 10-minute delays south of Elk. Expect up to 15-minute delays south of Westport at the Blue Speeds Trailhead to the Overlook. Expect delays at the Wages Creek Bridge near the Juan Creek Bridge. On 20, expect delays east of Fort Bragg and in Willits. On 101, expect overnight delays in Hopland. On 162, expect up to 10-minute delays from east of US 101 to south of Covelo. On 175, expect delays east of Hooper Ranch Road. For further updates, join us on social media via Caltrans District 1.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Brianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, a national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Sinkione, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.